Attention. I shall begin. Sunday news again. The United States, due to its faltering economy, has called upon the Arab Republic, Saudi Arabia, oil-rich billionaire, to help strengthen Taiwan economically so that the USA can break its formal recognition of Taiwan. It was taken over by the corrupt Kuomintang under Chiang Kai-shek nationalist by an outright invasion through USA and CIA cooperation of the Formosan people. Taiwan was formerly Formosa. Formosan people have become practically extinct in terms of their survival abilities, and economically they are at the lowest scale as second-class citizens. The U.S. had pledged eternal bonds of solidarity to the corrupt regime of Chiang Kai-shek and his now inherited power leader, his son. But apparently, in order to continue its nefarious arrangements with mainland China, renegade, nationalist, we used to call it a nationalist communism, because domestically at home, China practiced a reasonable form of cooperation and sharing. But their renegade practices of now joining the imperialist bloc of a trilateral commission, though they have no recognition in the trilateral commission, I can assure you. Their presence in Zaire, the foreign minister, China, renegade mainland China, is still in Zaire attempting to give economic assistance. So this mutual war arrangement has been condemned fiercely all over the world. Even Guyana Radio, that has to maintain a third world position, it's understandable, a non-aligned position, even they were very, very strong in their condemnation. They said the USA, GBS said at noon, began its Vietnam campaign in the same vicious way that they are now working in Zaire. Said the policies of USA in Zaire is fooling no one. There's a strong socialist content to today's broadcast over the Guyana Broadcasting Station. This is important in a non-aligned nation. It has to maintain itself in that position of non-alignment due to the Monroe Doctrine. But the input of the broadcast was strongly socialist and defensive of the Soviet policy, quoting Pravda and TASS exclusively, with no broadcasting whatsoever of United States news agencies' reports. Anyway, the Shah of the Saudi of Arabia is supposed to get the USA out of its economic trouble by giving more assistance to Taiwan so that it can be economically more independent. They don't quite trust China, and they don't want to quite cut off Taiwan, so they want to put it on the back of the Saudi of Arabia, who is the oil-rich, one of the oil-rich nations of the world, second richest in the world. Soviet Union first, Arabia second, Nigeria third, Iran fourth. Nonetheless, also the USA has appealed to the Saudi of Arabia, demagogue, religious thief, fearful of communism because of his Muslim traditional religious upbringing and his reactionary hold as king on the Arabian people. They have gotten from him a pledge to supply $24 billion for radar and missile submarines to make a conquest of the Mediterranean. would be my interpretation of it, so that the USA can dominate the Mediterranean through the Arabian money and head of state. How else can U.S. survive, as its economy, as I explained yesterday, is diminished? It has no minerals, has no resources. It's built up some nuclear arsenal, and it can offer that to nations like Arabia that have not yet developed nuclear technology. How long the mutual arrangement will go is very uncertain. The Soviet Union says that Carter's policies are leading from a transition of another Cold War into a direct confrontation. The strongest words to be transmitted from Radio Moscow in over 15 years. The strongest words that Carter's policies are leading from a transition. It was a Cold War era that appeared to be just a chilling to an actual confrontation, because the Soviet Union said it will not be intimidated by Carter's bellicose statements and his imperialistic designs. Strategic arms limitation talks, according to Senator Byrd, racist leader, majority whip leader of the Senate, said that will not be passed even if Carter were to get to it until next year. It'll be too late then. Senator Byrd said that Carter may wish it passed this year, but it will not be, and that it will have difficulty getting through the Senate any time. Italian people go to the election, the electoral polls today, to decide on restricting police powers, and it appears that there is success in view. Also, restriction of tax money to support the establishment political parties are two referendums on the ballot, in spite of the mood, supposedly, that the Red Brigade would create, according to the revisionist. It has not done so. There seems to be a leavening, more and more political awareness, and more resistance to police state tactics, as the people got enough popular support votes to put two referendums on, one restricting the wide police state practices of the national police and local police, the other to restrict tax dollar support to the major capitalist political parties. Prime Minister is in Linden, or just returned from Linden, championing the new referendum. Also defending import restrictions that Guyana and Jamaica both are employing to do, as he says, avoid having domination by capitalist governments unfriendly to third world and black people. Prime Minister Forbes Burnham feels a vote of confidence was given him at Linden for the July 10th referendum. 25 committees indicated their support. He indicated that it is essential to be able to defend Guyana's independence and socialist course, that it have a referendum giving a constitution that will provide the power to socialize this nation. Reportedly, according to the news, he addressed thousands at a mass meeting. There were reported cheers, which were not carried over the radio, but reported cheers of "We need Burnham" as he finished. He did recognize that a great section of lawyers and doctors and church officials oppose the constitutional referendum. He said they have nothing to do but to oppose. They have no consistency and are not willing to consult. He said, but I am accustomed to abuse during the course of campaigns. It's worth nothing. He said, I am offering democracy to the working class people, those who say kill the bill, because Burnham wants more power. He said, apparently very sincerely, Burnham has all the power he wants or needs. He said, we have to have constitutional provisions to guarantee us the right to health care, to housing, to work, and leisure. Then to satisfy the small entrepreneur, he said there will be a right to small business private enterprise and protection and safeguarding of their individual property and laws of inheritance. People's National Congress, he said, draws its strength from the masses and will never take away from the people their right to choose their own elected representatives. He said, I guarantee and promise that as a loyalty oath. Replacement of the Nigerian top lawyer, high commissioner, as he left in an address with Prime Minister Burnham, and they carried the content of it over the radio, he said that a certain white country to the north of you, purpose is to cause division between blacks and divide third world unity. He said Nigeria is pledged to closer unification and communication links with the Caribbean black nations. He said we, as black people, must not allow a white superpower to divide us. Strong terms for GBS. It is normally rather insipid in news reporting, which is understandable, being a third world nation and non-aligned. 6-hour power cuts are forced again in Georgetown. Power supplies hope to be restored by 4 p.m. this afternoon. He said, we're going to have, Burnham said, development without destruction. Barbados External Affairs Minister supports Guyana and Jamaica's strong restrictions policies on imports, said it's necessary to survive in a climate when third world nations are fighting for their very life. Guyana Radio quotes economists from third world nations, Britain and the Socialist Republics, that it is time to employ their suggestion. South Africa could only last 2 years. It would be an absolute chaos with total oil embargo. It charged the corrupt fascist regime, GBS did, of Iran for supplying 90% of the oil used by South Africa. Although only 20% of the energy needs of the apartheid regime, the racist concentration camp regime established by U.S. monopoly capitalism, only utilizes 20% of oil for its energy needs. Most of the energy needs of its military are dependent upon oil. And it said that long before 2 years of oil embargo, the economy would be in a severe depression in a matter of months. The tone, intonation, emphasis of Guyana Broadcasting Studios was that it is time that people show their unity against the concentration camp environment that's been set up by U.S. capitalism in Union of South Africa by this oil embargo. The Internal Revenue Service has issued a ruling that will end the tax-exempt status of literally thousands of organizations that publicize the views of candidates for public office or make mention of their views, the church view, or their nonprofit view on any legislation pending. Churches, environmental, and social issue groups, as well as voter education organizations, such as the League of Women Voters, will be affected by the IRS rule, the Internal Revenue Service. More of the outlaw mentality of fascism, the fascist mentality of monopoly capitalism in its senile era, as we see one law after another passing, stifling freedom. Two of them, the League and the Legal Office of the U.S. Catholic Conference, already have sounded alarm bells about the Internal Revenue Service rule, which has now taken effect as of the 4th of this month without any advance notice. The IRS rule applies to nonprofit religious, charitable, and educational groups that are exempt from federal income tax. The rule bars them from polling candidates for public office, even polling them, and even publishing their replies. Washington tax attorneys are concerned about the impact of this rule. Think it eventually will be applied to tax-exempt public television and radio stations and prevent them from airing political opinion types of broadcast that differ from the established capitalist view. Freedom is going out before our eyes in USA, and little is being done about it. We were too effective in that arena, and they're afraid, I guess, others will. You can see some of these laws are aimed directly at People's Temple. Proposition 13.1, cutting back all assistance for the poor, particularly an open dagger murderous attempt to destroy minority Mexican, black, Indian rights in California. Major reason for it was the cooperation of the tax department in Los Angeles, who sent out 500,000 homeowners' notices early that unless the point is strongly made that those property taxes, that your property taxes go up, that's what caused it. They made a notice that their property taxes were going up, and they sent it out before the usual time. Obvious emphasis to affect the vote. The statement was, after the Los Angeles mail was sent out to 500,000 homeowners, that unless the point is strongly made that those property taxes do not go up as those assessed valuations would suggest, Senator Leo McCarthy said before Proposition 13 passed, he said it definitely will cause Proposition 13 to win. Well, it did. Several other cities, San Diego, also did the same. San Diego. Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. But even the tax bureau, that depend upon their own livelihood for tax revenue, sent out notices of tax increases just to cause the people to vote for Proposition 13, that reduced all taxes, property taxes for the middle class, not the poor. The main relief is felt on the bourgeoisie, factories, industries, businesses. But it reduces some 65% and decimated, destroyed medical help, welfare assistance, all kinds of services, job training, has just been destroyed as California's budget has been cut back by $7 billion. Small liquor store owners reacted with dismay and bewilderment to the news that the California Supreme Court threw out a law that had protected them from cut-price chain stores of big monopoly capitalism for 40 years. Many feared a price war that would put them out of business. They were nervously waiting to see what will happen. It's a real shock. I never believed it would actually happen. They have been talking about abolishing the fair trade law for 20 years, said Shin Kwan Yim, owner of SNB Grocery at 1012 Post Street. It's going to be a big problem for us. We can't compete. We'll have to close, he said, my business will have to close within 6 months. Douglas Chang, owner of the liquor locker 1223 Taravile Street, was equally gloomy. He said he paid $32,000 for the small store just 16 months ago. It was a money loser from the start. Now, he believes it will go broke within 3 months. Well, another one said he had to close already before this because of the presence a block away of a larger liquor store that was illegally cutting prices. The previous owner of the store never mentioned the bomber, as they are known to the trade, down the street. He said, I've been trying to sell this store for months. Now with this decision, it looks as if nobody will buy it. It means 7 years of my hard-earned savings down the drink, said this owner, Steve Nelson, who also has to work now as a film printer during the day to survive in feeding his family. Many, many small store owners were reluctantly contemplating cutting prices, but none of them had optimism that they would survive. The end of free enterprise. USA always lies about being a free enterprise nation, but not so. Because the small business person, the small farmer, is fastly being pushed out of the scene. Nearly 90% of the farms of USA are owned by big multinational capitalists. All the stores, the nursing homes, there's no place for the small business person left. So what they call free enterprise is a hypocritical lie. USA is a monopoly capitalist nation, where only a few white ruling families have the control and also control the destiny of billions of people across the world and cause 2 out of 3 to go to bed hungry every night with our tax dollars raining napalm down upon black people, Asian people, and the poor of the world. A solid majority of Americans now express belief in astrology, UFOs, with the proportion having grown steadily since 1966, when the first measurement was taken. A new sign of the opiate, the media is giving great encouragement to astrology and belief in the UFOs. The latest survey, 77% of those aware of UFOs and astrology believe they are both real. One, real visitors from outer space. The other, believe that the stars control their destinies. Well, anything that capitalism promotes, you can know, is decadent and ulterior and absolutely subversive to the will and the achievement of peace and liberty for the working class. Carter lashes out at Cuba again for role in Zaire invasion. Cuba strikes back with a resounding accusation that Carter is a bully and that he and China are both gangsters. So the war of words continues to be strong, and it has not caused Cuba to withdraw its advisors from Nkoma in Zambia, nor has it caused them to withdraw their advisors in Angola, and certainly not in Ethiopia, where the Ethiopians are, under the People's Socialist Liberation, about to destroy the last pocket of USA and China's imperialistic backing of Eritrean capitalists who are trying to break that province that rightfully belongs to Ethiopia away, so that Ethiopia would be landlocked without seaport. FBI men are coming together in great strength of unity in the once hallowed kingdom of J. Edgar Hoover. It was a first. 3 top FBI officials photographed, fingerprinted, and arraigned. former director L. Patrick Gray, associates W. Mark Felt, and Edward Miller were indicted on charges of violating the civil rights of American citizens by authorizing illegal break-ins of the homes of those who dissented with the system. For hundreds of present and former FBI agents, it is a bewildering joke. Their response is panic, mimicking the actions of their old anti-war adversaries. Outside the U.S. District Court, they moved in mass, demonstrating, protesting, cheering their comrades who had been elected for jail, though they will not face any sentences. It's close to Z, you see. Z is very, very near. I'm sure you can see. We ought to study Z again tonight for intensive testing over it early, because new movies will be coming in on the boat. They left around 6 last evening from Georgetown and thus should be here by that hour tonight. There are 4 new Hollywood movies on that boat. I urge your attention. Don't be wandering about not listening. You could listen while the news is coming. Remember the protection of the people's property. I gave you a system last evening of television closed circuit, and we're working on that. Gabriel Thomas is to be invited into that with his electronic specialty. Tens of thousands of dollars to try to give you entertainment, but there's still too much breaking, wasting, loss of tools, breaking of fencing, breaking of housing, various things that we use we're not careful with. It's going to show in our ability to give ourselves the kind of high medical care that's the highest in the world. And all we want to eat, it's going to show. Coming in today is expensive fruits that I've brought in from Georgetown. But unless I get the cooperation of people to watch those that are breaking up things and never pick up any trash, I have to walk over this place and pick up the trash. People can walk right through it. So many never see. Everyone should bend over when you see a little piece of paper and pick it up. You should be concerned. And I observe those that do that. I equally observe those who do not, because I know they don't give a damn about this property and the welfare of the people. Anyway, the FBI is forming strong resistance and talking about taking things into their own hands to stop this socialist and communist maneuver, as they're openly calling it, to discredit the FBI. They have nothing to say about why these FBI figures broke in to people's homes, even the relatives of dissenters, not just the homes of those who were in socialist movements, like the Weathermen, but into the relatives of people's homes. There was little they could do because they broke into some very prestigious homes. According to the Bonn German report this morning, Brezhnev is an ill man, a sick man who must be frequently medicated, a man profoundly worried about the future, who feels that nuclear war is about to happen. These are some of the personal conclusions about Leonid Ilyich Brezhnev, Soviet chief of state and head of the Communist Party, which is the vanguard of liberation throughout the world. The Soviet Union has been the friend of the working class in Angola and Mozambique, now in Zaire and in Vietnam, bravely supporting it with its missile system so that China could not invade Haiphong Harbor. Yes, it'll be a sad time for Brezhnev, for the people, if he were to fade from the picture. Anyway, 4 days Brezhnev spent in West Germany, where the first he has spent outside the highly protective borders, according to this West German fascist news broadcast, and some of its wording will show that touch. Said the first he has spent outside the highly protective borders of the Soviet Union in nearly a year. Diplomatic observers from all countries were understandably curious to the measures to measure just how effective a world leader he still is. The curious included all the leaders of the capitalist Western world with whom Brezhnev is involved in long-term negotiations on the fundamental issues of nuclear war or peace. Also, leaders of the Communist Warsaw Pact are concerned about Brezhnev's health, many of whose political careers, according to this fascist West German report, rest on their personal connections to Brezhnev. These interests in Brezhnev's health are vital because the Soviet Union, in its 60-year history as the first communist government, has never solved the problem of orderly leadership successes, according to this capitalist periodical. Brezhnev has gathered more personal power than any previous Soviet leader since Joseph Stalin. And the danger of disruption and any changeover of authority following his departure has grown correspondingly and causes Western nations to tremble that there could be nuclear confrontation if his health were to fail suddenly. The conclusions of those who dealt with him in Germany are that he is an old 71 years, but still effectively functioning as the leader of the communist Soviet government and party apparatus. But the German observers also gathered a vivid impression of his physical and mental limitations. Please listen to the news. According to officials who met with Brezhnev, he was able to function in public steadily for about 90 minutes only at a time, before he excused himself to receive medication. This was described in German as Spritz, S-P-R-I-T-Z, an inoculation of some drug that appeared to perk him up and enable him to continue his activities. This revivifying treatment was administered both during business discussions and social functions, while he performed relatively well during the short working sessions that were scheduled. Brezhnev was constantly surrounded by aides who appeared to watch him apprehensively for fear that something would go wrong with his health. They seemed to circle around him, waiting for something to happen. One diplomat from one U.S. allied imperialist nation commented. Fortunately, nothing did. Following instructions from Moscow, Bonn, Germany scheduled only two major banquets, one with Brezhnev as host and the other with President Walter Scheel. A small lunch for 12 was held in Chancellor Helmut Schmidt's private office in Hamburg just before Brezhnev returned to Moscow, the capital of the Soviet Union that is the vanguard of Marxist-Leninist leadership and world liberation. The appearance of his physical, just his look in the picture, certainly would bespeak that there is edema. Brezhnev is reportedly wearing a heart pacemaker, and he suffers from emphysema, from smoking too much that killed my mother, and a slow-acting form of cancer of the blood, leukemia. He refuses to ride in helicopters, is suspected for some medical reason, and was instead driven at high speeds in a heavily armored Mercedes-Benz limousine in Germany. The 80-mile, nearly an hour speed normal for Brezhnev's Rolls-Royce in Moscow on a thoroughfare that allows different speeds where there's no danger was too fast for the tires on the heavy Mercedes, producing the most dangerous incident of the visit, a highway blowout. Brezhnev, worried about the world, stressed from the tensions of fear of nuclear war, impassively transferred to another car and continued his journey to Bonn, as if nothing had really happened. Man, when they get that kind of worry on them, and leadership responsibility, they realize it is nothing, and the death is probably inviting. No doubt he does. Seeing the horrid mentality of capitalists, the viciousness of human beings that we've even seen in our group who once claimed to be socialist turn worse than animal, You can understand how a person would not crave responsibility at 71 years. In his meetings with the German leaders, Brezhnev, wearing glasses and a hearing instrument, read from a prepared briefing paper. He then generally sat stony-faced while the host responded. The Germans had to look to his aides to see if they were nodding or shaking their heads, to see if there was any agreement, another diplomat reported. That shows that Brezhnev had certainly consulted with his aides, that the aides did not have to have signs from him, that their minds were democratically concluding what was right and just decisions. But of course, the capitalist press puts a different overtone on that. Brezhnev, even though he didn't say very much, seemed to be in charge. But we wondered how long he would last, said one German diplomat. The other key Soviet figures were longtime foreign minister Andrei Gromyko, who had had a falling out with Carter just a few days before, and Andrei Alexandrov, the chief of Brezhnev's personal staff. They seemed very important. Gromyko is more than a foreign minister, an observer commented. As he was leaving Hamburg airport, Brezhnev reached back for some of the ebullience lost since he last visited Germany in 1973. What did he like in Germany? He was asked. Oh, nearly everything, he answered. What did he not like? Nothing in particular, he answered. Let us hope that Brezhnev's health will be able to last. Saudi Arabia has grave concerns about U.S. policy in Africa, comes this briefing. Saudi Arabia is the one giving $24 billion, but apparently not without strings attached. It's America's most important ally in the Red Sea. It's becoming one of the sharpest overseas critics of what it regards as the Carter administration's policy of courting favor with black Africa by refusing to meet head-on with the growing Soviet-Cuban challenge. As the Saudis see it, the Soviet Union has now established, this is a capitalist point of view again, so it may be another Carter trick or a trilateral commission trick to make the Saudis look like the pressure for tougher policies against the Soviets when it may be just the other way around. You can never know. But as the Saudis see it, according to this capitalist report, the Soviet Union has now established its clear intention of intervening wherever possible all over Africa and the surrounding region. This they make clear in their mild-mannered, soft-spoken way is a direct threat to the Saudi kingdom that cannot be dealt with merely by moral protest from Washington. It has shown that this thing grows, said Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Saud Faisal in a recent interview referring to Soviet and Cuban intervention in various African countries to assist in the liberation of a people that U.S. capitalism and its renegade allies like Saudi Arabia have never done anything but to exploit. That's my commentary, of course. When Angola came, it was said to be a unique situation, but it repeated itself in Zaire and in Ethiopia, so it does spread, said the foreign minister of the reactionary kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The recent coup in Afghanistan, resulting in the establishment of a communist-dominated government there, has only served to confirm the Saudis' worst fears about Soviet intentions. With thousands of Cuban troops present just across the Red Sea in Ethiopia, and a strong Soviet-Cuban presence in South Yemen, there is a growing sense of encirclement here in Saudi Arabia. All this helps to explain why the reactionary Saudi Arabian regime is pressing the Carter administration to adopt a more aggressive posture in Africa. Well, apparently that's been done, because Carter's going all out, equipping some 15,000 mercenary crack elite troops, putting military advisors in Zaire to suppress the black people that want their freedom, like the Vietnamese. And finally we'll get it, just like the Vietnamese. They're pressing Carter, the Saudis are, to include an increase in military assistance to moderate Arab and black African states. and even hinting at the need for a direct American intervention to counter the expanding Soviet-Cuban military presence with their own U.S. troops. That's why the Arabs have given $24 billion to USA, because USA has now intervened. And USA is putting that aid in terms of military submarines, radar, to protect the reactionary religious regimes such as the Saudi Arabian regime. At this point, it appears that Saudi Arabia distributes more aid in black Africa than does the United States. The real issue, according to Prince Saud, is not the Carter administration's policy of non-intervention, but whether the Soviet policy of repeated massive involvement in the internal affairs of African countries and even intra-African crisis to help them with their liberation will go on unchallenged. Saudi Arabia is rich in oil and dollars, and the situation is not a financial problem, remarked Prince Saud, who describes his kingdom as a small country with limited means of defense. These, of course, lies. U.S. capitalism is defending them well, and they're mutually helpful to each other in their treachery. Something more than verbal protest from the United States has become a necessity, said Prince Saud, ruler of the fascist reactionary regime of Saudi Arabia. The Saudis are stepping up their financial assistance to capitalistic, pro-Western capitalistic African states that are threatened by the increasing Soviet-Cuban intervention for the liberation of Africa. It is not known by outsiders here exactly how much of the estimated $66 billion Saudi Arabia distributed in aid last year was earmarked for African countries. It is likely, however, that the amount easily surpassed the $350 million given out by the United States, making the Saudis an important asset in American efforts to stem the Soviet-Cuban tide of influence on liberation on the African continent. There's a notable irony in the new Saudi activist role in Africa, and Saudi complaints about American passivity towards the Soviet-Cuban liberation challenge. Only a few years ago, the Nixon Ford administration was pushing a somewhat lethargic Saudi government to do more to help the West contain the spread of communist influence on the Arabian Peninsula. Now it is the Saudis who are pressing the Carter administration as capitalism begins to totter, perhaps, if this is the case, as capitalism is definitely rocking and reeling all over the world. The reverse has come now. The Saudis are pressing the Carter administration on the same point in both Africa and the Red Sea region. With the United States increasingly dependent on Saudi oil and backing for the besieged dollar, which is constantly falling in value, Washington can no longer afford to ignore the pressure from Riyadh. It has placed the Carter administration in the difficult position of having to reconcile the demands of its new black puppet African allies with those of its most important Arab oil partners. While these Arab states tend to view Africa mainly as a new Cold War theater and the soft underbelly to their own exposed lands, much of black Africa is preoccupied now with the problem of containing local forces that threaten to break away from the dominance of capitalism in the African countries. And they were preoccupied with doing something about those strong forces of liberation that are bringing about the end of white rule in Southern Africa. On both counts, the Russians and Cubans have suddenly emerged as black Africa's most important allies, even amidst the Hearst press. The growing disagreement between Washington and Riyadh over the Carter, that's the capital of Saudi Arabia, over the Carter administration's new Africa policy, reached its peak last year over the U.S. refusal to provide Somalia with arms after President Mohamed Siad Barre, B-A-R-R-E, cut most of his ties to the Soviet Union and broke relations with the People's Republic of Cuba. The Saudis have been encouraging the United States to do more to wean Somalia away from the Soviet bloc for years, before the Somalian-Ethiopian War led to Siad Byers break with my... They were deeply disappointed when the split came, and there was no positive answer from Washington, as Prince Saud put it. But U.S. is fastly making up for that by backing the Somalians now. Washington found itself under enormous pressure from its black African allies, even though they were capitalists, some of them, not to reward Somalia because it was regarded as a flagrant violator of Ethiopia's borders. And U.S. needs more than oil. It's in a dither between the devil and the deep blue. It needs the cobalt, the minerals that I mentioned to you yesterday from these black nations, as well as the oil from Saudi Arabia. So it is really being put between the pressure mill as to what aid and assistance is going to give these days. Anyway, the nations of Africa regarded Somalia as a flagrant violator of Ethiopia's sovereign borders. Pro-Western Kenya, another neighbor fearing Somalia's territorial ambitions, was particularly insistent that the Carter administration reject Somalia's request for military assistance. Poor Carter will be sorry he ever saw the presidency. The Malaysian, the special Saudi Arabian relationship is deepening and depending over the lack of a strong U.S. response to the expanding Soviet-Cuban presence in the Red Sea region. It is exacerbated as the number of Cuban troops increases just across the strategic waterway in Ethiopia's northern war-torn Eritrea province. It is in principle a threat to the independence and security of our region and directly a threat to the independence and security of our country, remarked Prince Saud. What conceivable basis would they have for intervening in that area? He said of the Cuban and Soviet assistance for the liberation of Ethiopia. For the Saudis, the primary issue at stake in Ethiopia is not the preservation of its territorial integrity against the separatist movement, which is the view most black African nations hold and have impressed on the Carter administration. Rather, the Saudis are concerned about the massive intervention of the Soviet Union on the internal affairs.